Today is October 29th, 2014, and this is episode number 278 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, Managing Editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, Chief Spook. Ah, hear the adoring fans applauding my brilliant title for the season. Yes, indeed. To get the full story on anything we cover in this, see, Chief Spook, because it's Halloween.
I thought you were a spy.
No, the other kind. And you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at acm@macobserver.com.
I knew you weren't a spy, but I toss that out there so that people would be impressed with the fact that I know that that's a term that the Brits use for secret agent.
I figured you were actually just throwing me a bone.
And I was throwing you a bone.
Yeah, fair enough. Chief Spook. It's Halloween. Why aren't we doing our Halloween show, Jeff?
Well, we assigned the storyline to the interns.
Is that what that was? Was supposed to be a storyline that they turned in?
That's what it was supposed to be, and they handed it to me, so I put them back in the closet and locked the door.
That's probably for the best. That was awful.
Well, the worst part was the interpretive dance.
I know, right?
I know. I was like, really?
And the costumes? When are we going to get costumes? Plus, also, podcast.
I know. Well, the costumes I was really concerned about. Do you realize how those would have ridden up with the choreography we had?
I know. Good Lord. That would have been...
That would have changed our demographic.
Chafing and whatnot. Boy, but we've done... I have no idea. We've seldom gotten any feedback on our Halloween shows. We did three in a row, and we had a fantastic time doing them. But we just, I tell you, the between the interns and my move and
your move
and your trip, we didn't have time to come up with a good Halloween gag this year.
Yeah, I'm really disappointed in our interns.
Well, so am I. Let's see. Now we have some topics. Let me command tab over to that.
That's good because I forgot what our topics are.
Yeah, well, I didn't send them to you.
Oh, maybe that has something to do with it.
Here, I'll just do that right now. Boy, we are just super professional, aren't we?
We are.
We are like just the epitome of...
We're on our top game, Brian.
Yeah, pick one of those three right there. That's where we're going to start.
Let's start with Apple. Are they the new Microsoft?
Oh, you're going straight for the throat.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, Halloween and throat and yeah. Anyhow.
What?
I don't know.
Okay. All right. So, yeah. Is Apple the new Microsoft? Now, we might be getting boos and choruses of hisses. Chorus. Anyway.
Is it choruses? Cori? I like that. Let's go with Cori. I totally made it up, but it sounds good.
Cori of high. But
I want to point out, we're on our top game.
What we mean is, we have to kind of do a throwback Thursday, even though this is Wednesday. We have to go back to the 90s and the mid to late 90s in particular.
Okay. How about if we have Sherman take us in the Wayback Machine?
Okay.
You know about the Wayback Machine, right?
Yeah, but it got blown up in like chapter... Oops. Spoilers.
Oh my God.
Anyway. Back in the day.
Yeah, back in the day. Spoiler.
Anything that Microsoft did crushed whatever anyone else was doing in terms of the marketplace. And you couldn't get funding. If you were a developer and you approached venture capital and said that you were developing a Mac app, they
wouldn't even talk to you.
Yeah, they weren't interested. You know, everyone knew that Apple was dying. The real money was all in Windows development. And Microsoft had this. I'm pretty sure that vaporware started with them, but I don't know the etymology strong enough to be 100% sure of that. But Microsoft would regularly announce non-existent products in order to derail some initiative that some other company was doing. So some of the company would say, "We're going to do this." And then Microsoft would say, "Oh yeah, we're going to do this too at some point." And sometimes they did and sometimes they didn't, but what it tended to do was suck all of the life and energy and money out of the competitor's project.
So Microsoft vaping before it was cool.
Yeah, right. Vaping. Good. Don't even get me started on that. And it was Microsoft was the 900-pound gorilla in the room. Whatever Microsoft wanted to do, it could. Now, along with all that power came a lot of abuse to it, the vaporware itself.
Sure. Internet Explorer was a big part of the abuse.
Yeah, right. Absolutely, it was. I hold the story of what happened to Borland close to my heart. Where
I miss Borland.
Microsoft did Microsoft did everything it could to put Borland out of business, including paying what were then outrageous salaries to key Borland employees to come work at Microsoft. And in one case, they paid a key, I think it was a vice president. And he was like he was part of the technology team at Borland. What Borland did is they made programming environments that coders would use to actually write software. And Borland's programming environment was a lot better than Microsoft's. And they had a lot of market share, and Microsoft decided that it wanted to own the developer experience and attacked Borland with everything that it had. And at one point, like I said, they paid this one guy, I want to say it was $1 million as a signing bonus, which at that time was just a crap ton of money. And he didn't have to report to work for a year as long as he left Borland now.
You know, if someone handed me $1 million and said, we have a new job. By the way, it's a good paying job. But here's $1 million. You show up to work in a year, but you don't work anywhere else in between. That would be really difficult to turn down.
Absolutely, it would. So, I mean, you know, there was a lot of stuff that Microsoft did that went along with being the 900-pound gorilla that personally left me with was not liking Microsoft. That's just all there is. That's the short version. So we're not saying that Apple is that kind of company. What we're talking about today is the fact that that Apple is coming up with platforms like Apple Pay and HealthKit. And there are a couple of companies that are actually trying to go against them.
Yes, that's true. How about if we start with the HealthKit side? And the big name in that market to date, in the fitness tracker market, it has been Fitbit. And they've developed their own platform, their own ecosystem for taking different devices that can track your health and fitness data, feeding it into a single location, and then being able to view all that information and manage it as you see fit. And if that sounds a lot like HealthKit, that's because they're very similar in many ways. And it's been one of the features that comes along with Fitbit devices that makes those devices so enticing. It's because it doesn't matter what other equipment you get to track your weight, your blood pressure, or your heart rate. It can all feed into the same platform.
Right, which is, that's the thing that is driving me nuts about Fitbit, is there's nothing about Fitbit that would make them supporting HealthKit somehow exclusive.
No, and you can look at the other companies that have bought into the health or the Fitbit platform that are also buying into HealthKit to see that this does not have to be mutually exclusive.
Right, right. Apple has, of course, a track record of exerting maximum control over its platforms. But in the case of HealthKit, it's essentially something that's open that other companies, the other fitness device companies can plug into if they so choose.
Right. And so why turn your back on that platform?
Yeah, why turn your back on that platform? And so Fitbit has been doing its thing. This is what you were just saying. Fitbit has been doing its thing where other people can actually plug into its platform, right? Am I getting this correct?
You're getting it correct. And it's been great. It's something that I have used for years.
Yeah, and there is no reason in the world why Fitbit should abandon that. I don't want Fitbit to abandon its own platform. For one thing, its platform is a cross-platform.
Yes, and it's very well established, but that's a big thing right there. They offer a cross-platform solution. Apple does not.
Right, and that actually should be a competitive advantage for Fitbit that would allow it to continue to be a platform developer. You know, whereas sure. Apple is only interested, and this is key here. One reason, well, of course, Apple's history is of not supporting Android in any fashion whatsoever, except for here and there. But one aspect of HealthKit is that it gives us, the users, total control over our data. So, you know, the HealthKit platform is not just for monitoring data. It's actually for collecting data and for sending that data to, say, your doctor or potentially your insurance company or, say, a hospital, and doing so in a way that actually gives we, the user, maximum control over it.
Which is very compelling.
And that part really hasn't come into play yet. I mean, Apple's been working, like, we knew that Apple was working with, what, the Mayo Clinic?
Kaiser Permanente.
Johns Hopkins, is that right?
Johns Hopkins.
Mm-hmm. And that is a huge aspect of HealthKit, but that's not really big yet for consumers. It's something that's still in progress, really, is the way I took it.
Right. Yeah, that's how it looks to me too. It's coming. It's just not there yet.
Yeah, and there's probably going to be lots of devices that'll come to support HealthKit as well. But where people are really using HealthKit right now is both in monitoring the data that their iPhones actually provide through the motion coprocessor.
Right.
And also from collecting data from like the Nike Fuel Band and
The Withings Pulse, the Misfit Shine.
What about the Jawbone device? That's one.
The Jawbone Up. Yep, there you go.
And you know, it collects all that data and spits it back at you. And I've been using it just for monitoring my steps for the first time because I haven't had a fitness tracker and for the number of flights of stairs that I'm climbing. I've been watching both of those things through my iPhone 6. So there's the thing that Apple is doing, that is cross-platform, I'm sorry, that cannot be cross-platform, is this keeping your data secure thing. Right? That's something that Apple can never bring to Android, even if it wanted to, because Apple isn't responsible nor does it have control over the security of Android. So that's always going to be an Apple-specific thing, which is great. That's fine. That's wonderful. Fitbit doesn't need to go up against Apple in terms of reporting your data to hospitals and doctors and insurance companies. They can instead be the platform for fitness freaks in particular, people who are really into fitness.
Right. And they have been doing a great job of catering to those people, as well as casual device users. You know, someone that just wants to keep track of how many steps they take a day.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. But there's nothing that precludes Fitbit from continuing to do what they're doing so well and also plugging in to HealthKit. It's just, it should be a no-brainer for that company. And as it is, when Fitbit did not support, and, you know, they've been sort of a combination of hemming and hawing and just like, you know, la la la, I can't hear your question, and then finally actually saying that that they're just simply evaluating HealthKit and asking users what they would expect from HealthKit integration. I mean, are you freaking kidding me?
See, I'm seeing all kinds of people that have been longtime Fitbit advocates saying that they're switching to other devices, or when they need to replace their current Fitbit product, it will be from a competitor that offers HealthKit support.
Yeah, I that would certainly count. I'm not a fitness expert by any stretch of the imagination, but I am interested in being more fit, and I was certainly considering finally getting because of HealthKit, I was considering getting a Fitbit device in the weeks and months leading up to iOS 8's launch, and I won't be getting a Fitbit device. There's no way. I'll get something. Actually, I'll just probably wait for the Apple Watch, to be honest.
Sure.
But that's another issue.
And you are in the same boat that a lot of other people are in. I use my Fitbit every single day, and I actually think a lot about what do I do when Apple Watch comes out. Because, of course, I'll end up getting one because we need to review it. And I'm also very interested in its health and fitness tracking features. But then what happens to my Fitbit? And honestly, right now I'm looking at a scenario where I'm probably going to be using two systems to track things.
For a while, you'll settle on one.
Well, the problem is you can't do sleep tracking with the Apple Watch.
At least we don't think so.
Because at some point you have to take it off to charge it.
Yeah.
And I'm assuming that's a nighttime thing.
Yeah.
So, but if Apple Watch does sleep tracking, then my decision becomes a lot easier. I'm in a position where I'm like, okay, I may be stuck using two devices unless I decide that I don't need to track my sleep. But what about the other people that they don't need to worry about that part of it? Then it becomes a much easier decision to just move over to an integrated platform that they know is going to just work.
Yeah, and Apple's user base, by definition, includes people who are inclined to buy into Apple systems.
Right.
So why Fitbit would want to not cater to that crowd is utterly mystifying to me so far. Utterly, and it's this whole Fitbit's entire approach to this is just. I'm stupefied. I'm left resorting to making silly noises. I don't understand it.
Yeah. I'm kind of baffled by this, too.
And how much does it cost Fitbit to get kicked out of the Apple Store, which has happened?
Have their devices actually been pulled from Apple Stores?
Yeah, I thought
Or is it just something that's been talked about? I'm not sure.
I believe that has actually happened. And it's... I mean, that Apple Stores had to be a huge source of revenue for Fitbit, and now they've lost it because they didn't. I mean, they should have been ready to go with HealthKit support the second iOS 8 was released.
Well, I assume that's what was going to happen because when we saw HealthKit at WWDC back in May, we saw Fitbit as the device that Apple was showing off.
Did the Mammoth car just drive by?
Yeah, wow.
Is an episode of Speed Racer happening outside your house right now?
Yes. Yes, it is. Go, Speed Racer. Go.
Mammoth car. I'm sorry. You were saying that we saw it at WWDC. We saw HealthKit and Fitbit working together? Is that correct?
We didn't see them working together, but when Apple talked about device integration, Fitbit was the only name that I recall Apple spouting out.
Surely the Nike Fuel Band too.
Well, Nike Fuel Band's probably going away, but they made a point to highlight Fitbit.
Both excellent points. So why, like, this should have been a no-brainer. This should have been a no-brainer, which is what kind of prompted this question of, is Apple the new Microsoft?
You know, in this sense, I would say yes, because if you're releasing a product that doesn't support these platforms that Apple is pushing forward, then you are missing out. You're essentially out of the game.
Yeah, you really, really, really are. And Apple is going to win this one. Apple is going to be the king of fitness tracking through HealthKit, because Apple has actually opened it up to third-party developers. And Fitbit is going to lose this one. Apple is absolutely going to win this particular thing. And I don't understand. Fitbit has nothing to lose by supporting HealthKit. Why not do it out of the gate? And it's like, what do you expect from HealthKit? And that's just, that is such a ridiculous question.
And now it's creating these frustrating things for me, because like Fitbit just announced the Fitbit Surge, which is a kind of a smartwatch thing, mm-hmm. but it tracks a lot more on the health and fitness side than the Apple Watch will. And it offers some basic smartwatch type integration. So it'll give you alerts for text messages and phone calls. But it's not a smartwatch in the same sense that the Apple Watch.
No, it's not. It's a fitness watch.
It's a good one.
And see, that's the thing. That's the thing that again, just perplexes me. Because Fitbit can do things that Apple will not bother trying to do. And you know, Apple is going to be the king of fitness data. But Fitbit can and should be the king, remain the king of
the hardware.
Of the hardware side. Because that's something that Apple is obviously not interested in doing on a dedicated basis.
Right. And the specs on this Surge, which comes out early next year, mm-hmm. I mean, holy crap. It has 8 different sensors. It's tracking your heart rate, the steps, distance traveled. It can track routes for you. It has a built-in GPS, and it does the sleep tracking, all these different things, and heart rate monitor as well. And it runs a week on a charge. And then you look at the Apple Watch, which is a very compelling product, and it adds in all of the smart features that aren't on the Surge, but it doesn't have GPS built in. And from what we've been told so far, you have to charge it every single day. Right. So, see, it's cool, but then there's some disadvantages. And then I look at this thing that Fitbit's going to release, and I'm like, holy crap, this is so cool. This is the device for a substantial part of the health and fitness tracking segment. And yet, many of those people won't even consider it because no HealthKit integration.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. It's just crazy. And then we've got the other half of this. Now we're 24 minutes into the show,
and we're only partway through our first topic.
Yeah. So we've got the currency versus Apple Pay, and as highlighted by Rite Aid and CVS's decision to deactivate their NFC scanners rather than allow Apple Pay or Google Wallet, and you know, really, let's be honest, rather than allow Apple Pay transactions to take place.
Sure. And while it's a bad move on the consumer side, because there are already people that are saying, well, I'm going to Walgreens because they take Apple Pay. So they are losing customers.
Yeah. Okay. But let's
not like they're losing a substantial number of customers.
Yeah, but, the vast majority of people don't care about this. This is for partisans, that's for sure. But
sure.
Why? Well, good Lord. All right. So the background on it is this: CMX or MCX, was it MCX Merchant?
MCX. I keep wanting to say MXC, which most
which is funny. I keep wanting to say CMX.
It's M.
It's Merchant
X.
Merchant what exchange?
Merchant. Let's call it Merchant What Exchange. Let's go with that.
we are such professionals.
Top of our game.
This is a Walmart-led consortium of retailers who were looking to find a way around credit cards and the credit card, you know, the credit card hegemony, which is controlled by banks, where banks make a lot of the money and you know, they're grabbing all this consumer data and all this other stuff. And they were looking for a way around that. And so their solution was to come up with an app-based mobile payment solution that's cross-platform.
That, so far, this seems reasonable.
Yep. That rather than using a credit card, taps directly into your bank account.
Now I have a problem.
Asks for your social security number as part of their security, you know, just to make sure that you're actually who you are. What really, so that they can have it, so that they can track you.
Yep, I'm having more problems.
And ties your transactions together with a reward system, which is good for consumers.
Yeah, reward system, that's okay for consumers. And at least you're getting something for giving up your personal information.
Yeah, at least, right. You're getting, fair enough. And, of course, you know, the flip side of that is that, what's the story that Kelly's writing it up right now?
Okay, so the story that Kelly is writing up, even as we speak, is the news that someone has hacked into the currency servers and has managed to cull out the email addresses of the early testers for the program. So someone has already gained access to their servers.
Yeah, like I want to give a Walmart-led consortium my social security number and my bank account.
Right.
This is a disaster waiting to happen, and it's not even going to be waiting that long. It's apparently already started.
It's already started.
And it hasn't even launched yet.
No, it doesn't launch until 2015. And their systems have already been hacked. They've already had to alert people. And I look at this whole thing, and I'm like, all right, even when you get past the you need to open up or you need to unlock your iPhone or your Android phone, you need to find the app, you need to bring up the QR code that is linked to your account and then scan that code to make a transaction. Okay, looking beyond that, there's the whole thing with when your bank account is drained by hackers.
Yeah.
Well, who's responsible for addressing the fraud? And it's not them. I believe it all falls back onto the consumer.
The QR code thing, that was acceptable before Apple launched Apple Pay.
It was marginally acceptable, but sure, yeah. Yes, it was acceptable. Okay.
And even though QR codes have been compromised already. I think there was a proof of concept where someone delivered a malware through a QR code.
Oh, actually, it's not proof of concept. It's been a big issue in China.
Yeah, excellent. QR codes. Solid move there, freaking Walmart. You know what? Walmart is an awful company that has done extraordinary damage to the middle class and the merchant class in this country. You know, I'm gonna step into politics for just that little tiny second. I hate Walmart with a passion. There are lots of awful big companies out there, but Walmart is a company that has done it does so much damage to the very people that they look to as consumers, which is the middle class and the lower economic classes. Who wants to trust Walmart? I don't want to trust Walmart. I don't want to do business with Walmart. I'm personally never going to be using currency. I don't really think that even if Apple Pay hadn't been launched, that if Apple wasn't getting into this business, currency is DOA. It ain't going to happen. It was never going to happen.
You know, even if Apple Pay had not happened, when currency rolled out, I would not have even considered using it. The same companies that can't keep my transaction records safe, my credit card numbers safe, when I buy in their stores, want me to hand over control of my bank account to them.
Well, to be fair, I don't think Walmart's had a breach.
To be fair. I just assumed they had because everyone else has. But hey, Best Buy, they're in the group.
Yep, Best Buy's in the group, yep. And coming back to the problem or the issue with Rite Aid and CVS, currency includes a clause. If you're a participating member of MCX, you cannot support any other mobile payment solution. You are contractually obligated to not support other mobile payment solutions, which, first of all, is stupid. Because, I mean, not even Apple has tried to say that if you support Apple Pay, you can't support anything else.
Yeah, this would be akin to saying, well, since you're using this transaction system for collecting money, you can't accept cash from anyone.
Yeah, right. And I think that they had some, my assumption is they had some sort of delusion that they could get enough support in the market to enforce that clause. And that is laughable. That is so laughable. Apple maybe could have enforced this kind of clause. But that's because Apple has some of it has most of the wealthiest consumers, certainly in the U.S. at the very least. Right. So Apple has the kind of clout and the kind of dollar power behind it with its consumers, with its customers, that maybe Apple could have enforced that kind of clause, but probably not.
Currency, I can't imagine they would want to, but yeah, at least there was a slight chance that they could have made something like that stick.
Yeah, currency, no way. No way, no way, no way. Which, again, is part of this question. Is Apple the new Microsoft? Because currency fancies that it can go up against Apple here with Apple Pay, and they are just as delusional as Fitbit is.
I have to agree. And it's not even Apple Pay that they're essentially blocking out, or literally blocking out. MasterCard, they had their mobile payment thing that they've been working on. And I believe there's a couple others that have been in the works,
too. Yeah, Google Wallet, too. Google Wallet, which is one of the first.
Google Wallet launched in 2011.
Yeah. So, and you know, it's so laughable. So, my personal supposition is that MCX, who wrote this ridiculous clause in the first place, with the delusion that they could ever matter enough to enforce it, and either the lawyers or some pinhead suit within the MCX organization found out that there were, because a couple of bloggers noted that they were able to do Apple Pay transactions, even at Rite Aid and CVS, even though neither chain was involved with Apple Pay yet, just because Apple's system is fairly standards-based.
Yeah.
Right?
And
they found out about that. They freaked out and like, oh my God, you can't do that. You're supposed to be part of our thing. Fire off a cease and desist or, you know, a reminder or whatever it is that they said. And that is the reason why Rite Aid and CVS both deactivated their NFC scanners because they were threatened in some way by their own agreement with MCX. I'm assuming that's why that happened. I don't think it was to spite anyone. I think it was a desperate knee-jerk defensive reactionary position on the part of MCX. But I don't know, but that to me is the most logical.
I'm with you. That seems to be the most logical thing. It's a move that's smart from a legal standpoint because they do have a contract. It's just bad from a consumer standpoint because they're telling a segment of their consumer base, we're not going to take that money.
Well, it's also bad from a strategic standpoint because they're going to lose. They cannot will their way into the spending habits of consumers. I mean, you know, above and beyond their completely awful system that is designed to benefit MCX and its member companies rather than consumers, i.e. tapping. Oh,
that's a key point right there. Yes, I totally interrupted you, but it's such a key point. I had to interrupt you.
Well, let's explore it.
Okay, so MCX and currency. This is a system that's designed solely to benefit the retailers.
Yeah, not solely, because consumers do get these reward
programs. Okay, you do get the rewards. Almost exclusively, instead of solely. How's that sound?
Yes. But
this is a system that's clearly designed with the retailer in mind and not the consumer experience. Yeah,
they want to be able to data mine us instead of the credit card companies and the banks data mining us. And they also want to not pay the you know, in between 1.5 and 3.2, maybe 4% that they end up having to pay to the credit card companies, depending on which credit card it is and which reward program is tied to that credit card.
Now, I'm curious, what percentage do they pay to MCX? Is it lower? Is it comparable?
Well, it's the I would imagine that, okay, and I'm guessing here, this is pure supposition. So you're a member of MCX, that money is coming back, some of that money is coming back to you one way or another. Right? So really it's keeping more of the money within the pie that is owned by MCX and its member retailers. One way or another, that they're going to end up keeping more of that money that currently goes to these third party credit card companies and banks.
That's my assumption as well.
Right. So, I mean, it really does make sense for them. But like most companies that are out there, I'm looking at you, Facebook, they make decisions constantly. They're constantly making decisions based upon what is better for the company rather than what is better for the consumer. Looking at Google, too. I don't know. Google does do a lot of things for us.
Yeah, they kind of ride the rail. Whereas I'd say currency falls squarely on the other side of the rail.
Currency is the Facebook of mobile payments. How's that?
Wow.
Ooh. Wow. That's just dirty, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, it is. And here's the funny thing. Here's the funny thing. If you look at the coverage of this, I found one article that was, I mean, just like, it was an opinion piece at Business Insider, and I forget the chucklehead that wrote it, but it was very poorly researched because a lot of, if not most of his, facts were actually just wrong.
Oh, yeah. And you're right. It was chucklehead. Skip chucklehead.
Yeah, skip chucklehead. And so that one piece said that Apple is losing. And it, like I said, it was just all based on these just complete factual inaccuracies. Other than that, most of the financial press, most of the mainstream press is actually casting Apple as the much stronger competitor to currency and MCX. And, you know, which is weird for, you know, for those of us who've been following Apple for a long time, that's a weird thing. Apple is usually the underdog, or at least it has been until, you know, the last few years. Right. And it's Apple is being written about in a way that that Microsoft used to be written about, where Apple is the one that's going to win and these other companies are going to lose.
Which brings us back to the original question, is Apple the new Microsoft? And I stand by what I said earlier. Yes, they are, as far as platforms go.
As far as platform strength goes, yeah, not tactics, not strategies, not products, not quality. But in terms of the strength of their platforms, and here's another key difference there too, is that Apple is super selective about what markets it's entering, incredibly selective, whereas Microsoft under Bill Gates and under Steve Ballmer has always had this, oh my God, someone else is doing something, I must do that and have it all. You know, this sort of completely reactionary position where anytime any other player anywhere enters a market, develops a market, starts a market, comes up with an idea, all of a sudden Microsoft not only has to also be doing that thing, but must do so in a way that crushes the competition.
Yeah, that Microsoft has operated for many, many years under the, I call it the Highlander theorem. There can be only one.
And Apple is a lot more selective. Apple is infinitely more selective than that. And so, you know, I'm being a little bit defensive here because I don't want people to think that we're really comparing Apple and Microsoft in terms of strategy and products or anything like that. Just we're strictly talking about the strength and power that Apple has when it competes, where it competes.
Yeah, I wouldn't call what you're doing being defensive. It's necessary clarification. How does that sound?
Kind and generous.
You're welcome.
All righty. I think we're going to need to trim. You know what I think we should do? I think we should talk about, let's talk about the Apple Watch. No, let's talk about you and me. No, let's talk about our blogs.
I can't wait to hear what we really do talk about.
Blog. Let's talk about our blogs. I'm at GeekTales.
And GeekTales is a blog that you should check out because it's going to give you some insight into Brian outside of the whole TMO world.
Yeah, I wouldn't waste my time doing that, though. just steer clear away from my blog at geektales.com. Don't go anywhere near it.
So anyhow, when you go and check out geektales.com, you're going to get to see some really interesting stuff about Brian as a person and the process that he's gone through writing his novel, which, by the way, is really cool. And I'm really excited for the day when it ends up on shelves and we can go into a bookstore and do selfies with the book in hand and then send the photos to Brian.
Oh, that would be darn cool.
Well, when your book does end up on shelves, I'm going to start the Brian's book selfie campaign, and hopefully you will get inundated with photographs of people holding your book.
That would be very, very cool. I haven't told you this off camera, if I'm assuming there's a camera on it somewhere. Our mutual friend's mother who is a science fiction expert and just read the book.
Yes, yes.
She called it a page turner.
That's excellent. Yes, that's fantastic.
I was pleased. She was it was pretty good feedback. So, and you have your blog over at freshbrewedtales.com, TALES.
That's true. And over there, I talk about the things that I see people do when I'm in coffee shops. And the things that I see people do are things that, in many cases, you will probably assume I am totally making up. And yet, I'm not.
The guy with the porn. Remember, I sent you that one picture.
You sent me the one picture. Reverse cowgirl.
Yep. The reverse cowgirl. That's right. It's just surfing porn. It's just surfing porn right there in the coffee. And of course, you've seen plenty of other people do that.
Yes, so many that when I did a whole Ignite presentation on what I see in coffee shops, uh-huh, I had a whole section just on people watching porn.
Yeah, of course. And I have been told by a barista about the person that she caught self-pleasuring himself in the coffee. What the hell is wrong with people?
I don't know, but the fact that they're out there means I have stuff to write about.
It's true, at freshbrewedtales.com. It truly is a great blog, and I enjoy Jeff's blog. It's a fun read. You should check it out. Now, the Apple Watch.
Yes. I know where you want to go with this.
Yes, yes.
You've seen the list. I've seen the list
belatedly, but you've seen the list.
Yeah, so I'm totally, totally in on this one now. top game, people. Top game. It's the interface, and it's what that interface, the potential that interface has.
Yeah, so this is a very clever chap, and whose name, because we're such professionals, I don't have ready. He put the Apple Watch interface onto the iPhone. So, you know, it's got that sort of cluster of apps, and you can just sort of like scroll every which way to, mm-hmm. you know, to go through them, and you can zoom in and you can zoom out and actually launch apps and his point was to see what it would look like on the iPhone, and he released the source code onto GitHub for people who want to look at it themselves, and he did an incredible job, but that's not actually what we want to talk about.
No, it's the potential that comes out of this, and it's the idea that we don't have to be limited to the interfaces we've seen as traditional. And it's the excitement and the potential that his whole little hack brings to the table.
Yeah, it is, you know, Apple tends to, so, all right. So one of the beautiful things about Apple, and I'm looking ahead of time. I'm looking at Microsoft as the antithesis of this. Apple does the interface that makes sense for the form factor. So Apple, for instance, did not try to recreate a desktop experience on the iPhone, the original iPhone,
which was a very smart move,
right? And I mean, you know, that was it. We take it for granted today, but this was 2000. What is that? 7 years ago now.
Wow! Yeah,
almost 8 years ago, because we were first shown it in January of 2007, and then it shipped in the summer. Apple, it was completely revolutionary what Apple did in 2007. Just completely revolutionary. This motion, you know, the way you just flip through things on the screen, and the pinching and the zooming and the, you know, all the stuff that made the iPhone fantastic. Now, we take it for granted today. It was very quickly copied by Google with Android. Even Microsoft eventually. Microsoft did its own thing with Windows Phone. But it's still, you know, it still kind of borrowed some of the same concepts of, you know, swiping and flipping through things. But it wasn't was the desktop experience on a handheld device, like the Newton was. The Newton was largely a desktop experience on a handheld device.
Really? Do you think so?
Well, yeah, to a certain extent. I mean, as best they could.
It's, you know, it felt more to me like a desktop metaphor as opposed to the desktop.
Yeah, yeah, okay, fair enough. That's fair enough.
Yeah.
And you know, we're going back 20 years. You know,
I love the fact that that we can sit here and debate the Newton interface.
it's true. During the move, I found my Newton.
Oh.
And plugged it in and fired up immediately. By the way, dead battery, completely dead battery, plugged it in and instantly turned it on. That's you can't do that with an iPhone today.
No, actually you can't,
because it, you know, needs to get enough power that it can stay ahead of what you might be doing with it,
right?
So anyway, that's neither here nor there,
but it's really cool.
The So Apple does what Apple is capable of, coming up with new things that are right for the form factor that they're doing. You know, Microsoft under Steve Ballmer, they had this whole thing where, you know, the desktop experience and the tablet experience needed to be the same, which is just insanely idiotic. We've talked a lot about that in the past.
Highlander,
right? And then with the Apple Watch, Apple showed us yet another way of doing things. Apple did not try to bring the iPhone and squish it down,
which was so smart.
Again, so smart, because Apple is capable of doing these things, and I don't think that any of the various Android devices that came to market before the Apple Watch was announced, none of them were truly coming up with a brand new interface, a brand new way of thinking about things.
No, they couldn't step outside the box.
No, not at all, because Apple hadn't defined that box for them yet.
That's a good point. Apple had not defined that box.
Right.
And now we have this coder that stepped outside of Apple's box.
Well, kind of actually just redrew the box around the iPhone. How's that?
All right.
Boy, we're just with that. Stretching this metaphor from here to kingdom come.
Well, we can. So we do.
It's what we do.
Yeah, but I really liked that he did this. Even though it's not an interface that I want on my iPhone, it was really cool to see what happens when you scale it up to that bigger screen. Well, and some of the things he did, like when you flick, it always centers, so there's one icon right in the middle of the screen.
Well, that may be what the Apple Watch does.
It may be, but it was something that he pointed out in the video. Is
right.
It does this
right, and then he recognizing the fact that he's got more screen real estate. He in the larger modes, he put labels underneath the icons. Now, the Apple Watch, there aren't any labels because you couldn't be able to read them anyway.
True, but what showed me was that there are other ways that we can create an interface on the iPhone that could be very compelling.
Yeah, I think that I would enjoy using that jumbled cloud of icons, where essentially you don't have pages, you actually have just one big giant globe of icons that you can go any which direction to get to. I think I would enjoy that. I know that John Martellaro was just like, you know,
he was like almost militant. No.
Yeah, that's a terrible thing. He doesn't sound anything like that, but whatever. I'm John Martellaro. it's ridiculous. And I love John.
I shouldn't laugh. I only encourage you.
But so, like, as an option, I would enjoy having that option on my iPhone, I think. And keep in mind, this is just one guy doing this. This wasn't a team of developers who were trying a million different ways and tweaking, you know, what exactly should come up to the iPhone and what shouldn't. And it was like, for instance, when he would zoom all the way out, so you get all the icons just as little tiny dots.
Uh-huh.
That's useless.
It was totally useless. But when you zoomed in, then it became useful. You know where it could be useful, zooming out all the way? You can still kind of tell what the icons are. So if there's enough difference between the various app icons that you have on your device, you have an idea which way you need to scroll to get to the cluster you want.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and it's cool. And here's the thing. Apple not only has the ability to do the interface that makes sense for the form factor, Apple also has the ability to borrow the things that it can and should borrow from one device or one operating system and bring it to the other.
That's true. They have that ability.
Like iOS, for instance, was based on the OS X kernel, right? You know, they share that between the two. When the iOS was flattened, Yosemite was eventually flattened. You know, we've got transparencies come and go. You know, I think transparencies were really first again in iOS 7 and are, you know, play a major role in Yosemite. Mm-hmm. There are little things like that that Apple brings, not because they're trying to make everything the same, but they're bringing those things that make sense to bring.
Right. Yeah. They're not, for the most part, doing things gratuitously with the interfaces.
Right. So I think it's possible that some of the stuff that we're seeing in Apple Watch could eventually come. I mean, maybe not exactly what this guy did, but some of the things that Apple is working with in Apple Watch will probably eventually come at least to iPhone and iPad, and maybe even to OS X. You never know.
Yeah, you don't know. But the thing is, Apple is watching how people use all of the operating systems.
Mm-hmm.
And they learn what works and what doesn't based on the feedback that they're collecting.
And they're willing to kill their own darlings.
And yes, and they do kill their own darlings
all the time. You know, they're willing to just say no, and they're willing to also sometimes say yes. I mean, this guy doing this with the iPhone, putting his little project and duplicating more or less this Apple Watch experience on the iPhone, it really did remind, I guess it reminded, because you were the one who, I'm just copying you at this point. It reminded me that there are more things that can be done with iPhone than we're necessarily thinking and seeing today.
Right. Yep. There you go. I agree with you, especially because I said it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. All right. And on that happy note, we're out of time.
Yes, we are. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. And thanks for listening.
And indeed, thanks for listening. And I'm still messing up this little transition here. Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by CashFly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for TMO, and that's all for this week.
And as always, stay subscribed, because we're on our top game.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer. Unless, they see us first.